The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello.
On this show, we mainly talk about music and movies.
Oh, I'm not old
yet.
I'll worry about when I'm old.
Hey, welcome back, Brian.
It's the secret. It's the secret record. I'm going to do it every time.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
Welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere's post 100th episode special. Applause! Yeah!
Woo! Woo! We couldn't count correctly.
Yay!
Yeah.
Education in America.
Me fail English?
Anyway, that's impossible. Anyway, so, no, it's, you know what? It's, to be fair, when Justin and I started the show, I honestly didn't think we were going to make it to 100 episodes. Because, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, you guys wouldn't remember this because you guys weren't around when we first started. But,
I mean, well, we were, but we were off doing other shit.
Well, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Like, that's a bad way to phrase it, but we did,
before
like...
Before you were born, let me tell you about Boldly Going
Well, that's the thing. Like, for instance, like, we didn't record centrally in Frederick. I had to get in a car and drive an hour and a half down to Baltimore every weekend to
you
record.
Poor bastard.
Not really. I had fun with it. That was kind of one of the things I looked forward to in my weekend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really didn't lose any sleep over that. But, you know, then, you know, he, you know, got into school. Like, he was, you know, had to take school more seriously. And so we stopped recording as much. Then we took a break. And then we came back. And then we took another break. And we came back. And then it started. We picked up Sean as one of our hosts. And then, then the whole Castwave thing started. And that's when things really started to pick up, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, it's almost 4 years now. Now that I think about it, I'm like, good Lord, 4 years? Where does the time go?
You've been doing this for 4 years?
We started, the first episode of BGN was recorded in, like, at the end of December 2009.
Wow.
So, I think we're just officially over 4 years at this point.
But we really can't count. That's actually 6 years, dude.
No. See?
It's 2015.
I know, but I mean, the thing is, you have to take into account that there was a period where we didn't record for 6 months twice.
Okay.
So really, if I really was to count, okay, so
if
maybe
we're splitting hairs, it would be 4 years and like 7 months.
There you go. Five. Okay. 4 years, 7 months, and we've only put out 100 episodes. That's
four more years. Four more years.
Four more years. Anyway, so but no, it's, and you know what, guys? I want to say I still have fun with the show, and I'm glad you guys are here with me now.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You're quite welcome, man.
To help solve it. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. It's a nice fuzzy feeling.
Oh. I wonder if Rocky can make it the entire episode without using his actual voice.
That's going to be kind of hard.
Okay.
Considering you just did it.
See, you ended it right there.
You didn't even try.
You didn't even try.
Oh, God, but it's so hard.
I know. It's just...
No.
I know. I get it. It's
don't difficult. Do it. It's boring.
Well, okay, so there's a couple different topics I wanted to talk about tonight until we seek into our interview portion of the show, which will come in our second half.
I still think it's pronounced Segway, man. One of these days we got to look that up.
Yeah, we do.
We do.
I mean, it's I don't know, but I'm agreeing with Jordan here. It sounds more like Segway to me. Let's go ahead. Because
like,
I've never
here's
heard
the
anybody
thing.
Say...
The spelling of it makes it look like Sieg, but you're saying it's Segway.
Segway.
Like, as in, let's segue into this next topic.
Right, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's the same word, but it's just... People are always arguing about this.
Feel free to tell us in the comments, folks.
Tomato, yeah. Tomato.
Yeah. All right, so, first thing I want to talk about, rear gear.
I'm not that kind of girl, Colin.
Brian, I'm not asking you to do that. What I'm discussing right now is, it's, quite frankly, it's the, I see some weird-ass shit on the internet. I really do.
Yeah.
But this came across my viewpoint the other day, and it was...
Came across your peepers?
It confused the ever-loving shit out of me. And mind you, the original posting of it was on a... I don't honestly know if this was a mock pro-Christianity website.
There's a lot of those.
Right, so I didn't read too much into the subtext on the actual page.
Yeah.
But it, basically what it was is it was, quite frankly...
It's got to be satire.
Rear Gear is a cover for your dog or your cat's butthole.
Uh-huh.
That's it. You tie it up around their little tail and it hangs over their butt.
So it's kind of like a... It's kind of like a little... Like air freshener tree.
That's the thing, dude.
The way you described it is that it's basically a chastity belt for gay dogs.
No, that was how the website that I first found this on described it. And like I said, okay. I don't know if it's a mock pro Christianity website, but it's just like product created to prevent your dogs from becoming homosexual. 63% proven. I'm like,
your dog is a godless sodomite.
It honestly confused the shit out of me. But then I clicked on the link for the product itself,
uh-huh.
And this is what came up. And that's the thing. I thought this was a fake thing. Uh-huh. But no, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
You can buy this in the real world.
Well, apparently the Etsy shop that was selling it sold officially out.
Why? God.
So let me just.
Where's the market for this shit?
I wish I had. I was making so much money that I could spend. I could spend it on ironic purchases.
Me too.
Well, let me tell you. Let me describe this product for you. This is the actual Etsy shop description. Etsy, for those of you who don't know, is just basically hipster Amazon.
Pretty much. Take it away, Colin.
So the item details for Rear Gear, and yes, I checked. That is the name.
There's a couple other things you can describe as Rear Gear that we're not
going to. Item details. Is your pet feeling left in the dirt because his or her unsightly rear? I've got them covered. Rear Gear is handmade in Portland, Oregon, and offers a cheerful solution.
Why did I know it? It was going to be somewhere on the West Coast, either Seattle or Portland. Anyways, continue.
All right, so Rear Gear is handmade in Portland, Oregon, offers a cheerful solution to be rid of your favorite pet's unmanicured backside. Rear Gear comes in many designs.
You can manicure an asshole.
Woo! I don't think that stops technically with animals. I think technically you can
manicure,
do that.
Manicure, pedicure, asshole.
Let's get a car Christmas tree for my hand.
But so anyway. No, wait. There's still more. Rear Gear comes in many different designs, including a disco ball, air freshener, heart, flower, biohazard smiley face, number one ribbon, cupcake, sheriff's badge, dice, and you can even make your own custom one. So there's a Rear Gear for everybody.
I would not buy the harp because I think that would.
No, not harp, heart.
Heart. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I was about to say, if it was a harp, then it really wouldn't serve its purpose, would it?
I would make one for my jewels.
Here's the funniest goddamn thing about this entire thing. I don't think this is a fake picture. I don't know if this is the girl who markets the product. She is, like, you literally see her next to a poodle or a shih tzu or something.
Appropriate.
And the dog has the product. Like, it's basically just a giant
sticker.
Like, I wouldn't even say a
Christmas tree ornament.
It's a recycled cardboard. So it's basically just like one of those air fresheners, but just not
the Christmas tree,
not without the smell, right? But I mean, literally, it's a giant flower covering up its butthole.
Yeah,
and she's just like right next to it with her thumb up, her thumb in like, you know, like in a
her thumb up where
her thumb just in front of her in a happy motion. Yes,
I'm gonna ask the same question that I used to ask about chastity belts. What happens when they need to poop?
Well, see, that's the thing. This is not when I say this is covering its butt. I mean, quite literally, it's a cardboard cut that's just tied over the tail, so it just dangles over the butthole.
Okay.
Yeah.
So quite frankly, the dog could just, you know, get into its normal position and poop.
It could give it a skid mark, even.
Like, I don't think this thing would hold in place unless you tied it around their legs,
basically, you pretty much have to buy these things in bulk because after one day, they're unusable.
Pretty much.
They're soaked in your pet's various offals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Act now for $9.99.
Right.
Oh, and they're only $5, guys.
But sure. If you act now within the next 10 minutes, we'll double it.
I
don't know. I'm kind of glad I don't have a pet right now.
This seems both highly unsanitary and just absolutely useless.
I mean, this is like the equivalent of the Kelvin pissing on another truck logo design. Yeah. That's the pet equivalent of that.
I feel like people are going to be walking in the park and somebody walking their dog with this thing, and they're going to doubt their own sanity. That's like, I looked back briefly, and I swear there was a pink heart inside that dog's ass. Yeah.
I don't know.
My God, what does that mean?
Is that a cutie mark?
When did dogs start getting tramp stamps?
You know they actually made those for girls too.
So no, that's what they, yeah. These?
Yes, for the hide their ass crack.
Oh.
If girls wear their pants really low, they have this little thing. It's like a tramp stamp. Just plop it right in, and it'll cover up the little.
Is it kind of like a pasty?
Okay, sticker. Do they not have the option of pulling up their pants?
That's true.
They choose not to.
Yeah.
Is one of them a quarter? Okay, never mind. All right, moving on. Moving to another subject.
Please.
I'm sorry, Jordan has a question.
Oh, well, no, I just thought I'd throw in my the thing I mentioned on 420 this week.
Oh, yes, please. All right, so,
yeah, I'm not, I certainly don't partake in the ceremonial herb of April 20th.
Mm.
But I came up with this great, what I thought was a pretty great little thing to say on Facebook, and I'm constantly trying to make excuses to go on Facebook or Twitter anymore. So late on the 20th, I typed, "This April 20th, it occurred to me how fortunate we all are that there are fewer than 87 days in January." And nobody has responded to this yet. So I'm really starting to wonder if maybe if people just don't get my jokes. And I understand that, you know, most people don't.
Now, to be fair, I saw this comment the day he posted it, and I didn't get it. Flew right over my freaking head. And Jordan, if you don't mind, I'd actually like to explain it on air, if I might.
Go right ahead.
Yeah.
If you want yourself some time, feel free to pause the podcast for as long as you need and parcel it out first. Because I promise you that might be more rewarding than being spoiled.
Okay.
This is your option now.
Yeah.
And we're back.
Okay. So the idea is that Jordan's message came on 420, April 20th. Obviously, 420 being, you know, the ceremonial time and or date in which you partake of the marijuana.
Because it's if I'm remembering my Snoop Dogg tracks from the 90s well enough, 420 is the LAPD's numerical code for marijuana possession, or
I want to say it's possession.
Well,
possession or sale of, I don't remember which
that's
one.
That's one rumor. The other rumor is that it was just a bunch of kids hanging out that was just a really, you know, convenient time for everybody to meet up and smoke.
Yeah, I like the way he says it better.
Fair enough.
So we're going to go with that.
There's a couple different theories behind where 420 came from.
Again, like his better. Going with his.
That's fine.
Okay, so he says 420, and then he says, be happy that in January there are less than 87 days. Those of you who are also familiar with the police lingo might actually be laughing your asses off right now, because obviously January being the first month of the year, one, and 87, 187, a very shitty Samuel L. Jackson film.
Cop killer.
Or 187 on a motherfucking cop.
Yeah.
I.e. So, the code for murder.
For murder. So basically January 87, I guess we would be honor bound to make that the purge day.
Yeah.
Just knowing humanity like I do.
I mean, if things work that way, then pretty much, yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, and so the thing is I saw that joke, and I like I said before, I didn't get it. Right over my head, Jordan explains it to me, and then I realize, wait, why didn't I get that? That is so ludicrously simple. What is wrong with me?
And I guess the next question I should ask is, why don't rappers ever talk about any other numerical codes? For like, are they not interested in any other crimes? I find that hard to believe.
Maybe those are the
sexy?
I was gonna say maybe those are just the easiest to perpetrate.
Or the easiest to remember.
That too. Okay, so obviously, and honestly, I just when he told me that, I laughed, but then I was like, God damn it, I'm an idiot. It was a good joke. I got it after you told me.
It's solid.
You have to take a minute and actually like, oh, wait. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, that's... That, I believe me, I'm used to that by now.
But I thought it was funny after you told me, okay? So, don't feel bad. It was a good joke. It's just lost on me, but I just... All right, so now, something I've been wanting to talk about for like a week.
What is it, Colin? What is it?
Oh, the Star Wars trailer.
Star Wars trailer.
Oh, this is a Star Wars trailer.
Continue.
Do you remember where you were when you saw it?
I was here.
Oh my God, no.
I was as giddy as a schoolgirl.
I was at my computer.
Well, here's the funny thing, right? So this got released middle of the day, what, last Wednesday?
It was Friday,
last Wednesday or last Thursday?
No,
because I was off work and I was at home.
The Star Wars Celebration started, what, Thursday?
Yeah, so it had to have
been
Thursday.
It had to have been Thursday, I think it was, yeah.
Because it was last Thursday because I was at home sitting here and then was it you that posted it? Or?
Yeah, I posted it. Patterson thought it was fake.
Yeah, he posts it to... So Brian posts this trailer and... They automatically, Zach, who's like one of our group's biggest Star Wars fans, just immediately twerks at tweet, messages.
He's since deleted it, by the way.
Yeah,
I imagine him immediately twerking after seeing that.
Yeah. No, actually, so he messages us and he's like, fake, just fake. I'm just like, all right, well, I've got nothing better to do. Let me watch it, right? I start watching it and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually it.
This is happening.
And that's the thing. It hadn't... I was on the cusp of it. Like, it hadn't blown up on the internet yet. Brian had posted it, and that's all I had heard.
Yeah.
Like, no... Like it wasn't, like, multiple feeds yet. It was just... It had just coasted
just
on
leaked.
The... Yeah. And so I watched it, and I started losing it. I don't know about you guys. I was like, Brian, it's real! Holy shit! It's real! Fucking hell!
I was sold when I saw the Star Destroyer in the sand.
Oh, heck yes. That was awesome.
Oh, by the way, those of you who don't know, we have been joined by Spidey Steve Woo! Custer.
Hello. Here comes the Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a friendly neighborhood after all. Not too much.
All right, so thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
And so we're gonna get to your interview. We want to talk about everything about your campaign.
There's so much to talk about there.
And honestly, I mean, that was like the second big piece of like nerd news we got last week.
Yes,
thank you.
Because like I said,
oh, we were, Batman versus Superman trailer leaked too. So.
Well, that actually that was the third piece of news because we actually got Star Wars. And then I first heard about your campaign through a friend of mine.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
We'll get to that.
Star
but
Star Wars that
yeah.
Jurassic World maybe
no Jurassic World came after.
That was this week, yeah.
Batman versus
yeah.
Superman, but that's okay. We're gonna get to all of it. Okay, so
it was a big weekend for trailers, people.
Yeah,
so big. Anyway, so all right, I want to go around the room here, and I want everybody to tell me what they most enjoyed about it. I'm gonna start with you, Brian. Go.
Oh God, what isn't there to enjoy? You know, the voiceover from Luke. You know, like talking about like you know the Force runs strong in my family, and you see the burnt mask of Darth Vader. You know. And it's like, oh my God, like, we're going back into this universe, and, like, I don't know, like, I'm gonna leave it right there, because there are so many other great moments that I want other people to mention, I was like, oh my God, we're finally going back into this part of the universe.
Yeah,
like,
now, has anyone else seen the discussion posts on the internet that there was concern that that audio was being pulled from Return of the Jedi?
I mean, it sounds like...
It sounded to me like it was just pulled from Return of the Jedi.
Well, it's an interesting point because, I mean, in the context
the speech that he gives to Leia.
Well, no, and...
That he uses to be like, hey, guess what? You're my sister.
Right, and a lot of people were
sorry,
like,
sorry, we made out last movie.
Yeah, by the way.
Yeah. P.S. Sorry.
Sorry we're Space West Virginia, but whatever. Anyways.
But, well, that was the interesting point because a lot of people were putting up the argument. It's like, oh, you know, he said his father hasn't. It's like, it's obviously got to be from Return of the Jedi because Vader's dead in these films. It's like... Well, really, I mean, like, and this argument was actually presented in this was like, well, is it really Anakin is dead because obviously we saw him as a Force ghost
at the
end of Jedi, so he could still
luminous
technically
beings
exist.
Are weak. Luminous beings are weak.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So,
yeah, so it is possible that could be new recording, but I don't know. So it's all right. Rocky, go.
They're bringing back the cast, the original cast.
Yeah,
yes.
I was a little bummed we didn't see Leia in it.
Well.
We didn't see Luke either, did we?
We saw a glimpse of him, robot hand.
Yeah,
robot hand. Yeah, I was kind of fascinated by the fact that they're actually accentuating the robot hand, whereas, of course, all throughout Return of the Jedi, his robot hand looks exactly like his old human hand to you know.
I guess they have space
to pare down on the special effects necessities and 1983 technology. But,
yeah, and that's weird because
just throw a glove on it,
right?
Believe me, I could go on about really hysterical. Moments about characters who are supposed to be missing hands or arms or something, and the actor still clearly has all their arms and hands and such.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, it's not just because you're here, Steve, but the only movie I could even think of that actually pulled it off convincingly was the first Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, compare that with the Kirk Connors who appeared in the Sam Raimi trilogy, which his arm is clearly in his shirt.
Behind his arm.
It's,
shirt.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Like, you can totally see it. There was no hiding it. It was just like,
it's
boom,
so bad. I'm amazed they even photographed him from that side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was just thinking, you know, we were talking about the hand. I just saw that Kevin Feige, the Marvel executive producer, just made an announcement today that every movie in Phase 2 of the Marvel Universe has had someone lose their hand.
What is with
Which is really interesting to me. Like, Loki loses his hand, you know, in the fake part of Thor 2.
Right. And Nebula.
Yep, Nebula. Bucky loses his arm. You know, everybody loses a hand kind in Phase 2, which I never even drew that, you know, connection until I saw that announcement today. Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, that's a thing. A message or something.
It's a nod that Disney owns Marvel and Star Wars.
What was it for Iron Man 3, then?
I'm trying to remember.
Was it one of the suits? Was it?
He did lose a lot of suits.
No, Ellen Brandt. She was missing an arm before she got the extremist treatment.
You're right.
Yes, that is correct.
Right.
Yeah. That is correct. Yep.
Good pull. Good. Very good pull.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thanks. Jordan's the man, man.
All right. Hail Mary.
Jordan. So, Jordan, your favorite part?
There are two things I want to mention. First and most facetiously, wow, does Harrison Ford look old?
And Chewie's
looks
sharp.
He looks like Michael Douglas 15 years ago old.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty bad.
Oh.
Secondly, the thing that I've seriously clung to about this trailer, I'm so happy that there are going to be so many practical effects in this movie.
Me too.
Yes.
Oh, right. Amen. Like, I for the longest time, I thought that the new cute little robot friend...
BB-8.
I thought that thing was all CGI. It's not.
It's all real.
onto a stage.
Yeah, it was at the Star Wars Celebration event. It's like JJ had it roll on stage. I was like, oh my god, this is the best thing.
Like that's great. There's a battle scene in which a TIE fighter swoops in, and it's clearly an actual TIE fighter mock-up, like on a cable rail.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like I'm so pleased that they care that much.
I mean, you can. The thing about that is, like, you can, I don't know, I get, you can just kind of innately tell when something's CG or when something's real.
So it takes away from it.
It's so good to see that. I absolutely, it's like.
And the thing about CGI is that these days, CGI is actually can be so good that it is nearly seamless.
Yeah.
I think I was like 80 minutes into Guardians of the Galaxy when I said to myself, you know, maybe there actually isn't a talking raccoon there. Because. Yeah. That was really good.
I've accepted the reality.
Smaug in the Second Hobbit looked amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And you know, CGI is that good, and yet a lot of blockbuster movies are saying to themselves, well, practical effects have they have a lot of advantages too. Let's not just abandon them entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so grateful for that. I'm grateful that there's this uptick in craftsmanship in these kinds of films anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the beauty behind that is that JJ, before going into Star Wars, was already a super fan of Star Wars, of the original films. And that's why I think one of the reasons why he was pushing for, you know, actual prop effects instead of going with just CGI for everything, which is good.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously production costs are going to be out the roof, but I can live with that.
Yeah, but taking it back to the basics with some of the practical effects too, like really, in my opinion, ups the film quality because we're still taking like the extant movies and saying, hey, this is what we did with those movies. We're going to keep recreating that for you.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, knowing how much of a fanboy, you know, JJ is and knowing that they're doing this, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen, nobody's seen the movie, but it already feels like a love letter to the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It does. It feels like such a love letter to the original trilogy and how things were made. And I really appreciate that because, you know, like the even in the teaser when you saw the Millennium Falcon for the first time, it was just like, oh my god,
here it is.
Yes,
yeah.
And then in this trailer,
you
money.
Say that, and yet I distinctly remember as saying, "Wow, this looks like a love letter to the original trilogy." When I watched the trailers for the prequel trilogy.
Yeah. Oops.
Oh, no. Yeah. All right. So we've heard from everybody. Let's hear from Steve. Steve.
My favorite thing in the trailer was actually probably just seeing the X-Wings kind of glide down into the water.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love that. And there's nothing more to me than I like more than just like watching the X-Wings on A New Hope, like flying around the Death Star. And I'm like, yes. Like that's where I geek out the most with Star Wars, and I loved seeing that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Seeing that the helmets were still staying, you know, somewhat reminiscent of, like, the Rebellion and keeping, like, a certain uniform quality to it.
Yeah.
I was just like, yep, I'm co-signing with this. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and it's, oh, man, the Stormtrooper helmets, how they just...
They look...
Yeah.
Oh.
They do look really cool.
They look
yes.
like they've gotten an upgrade.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll say.
And that's... Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, my only question, and I mean, this is one I'll push back to you guys, maybe if this is one you guys have already talked about, or it's like a... What is home that Han says, Chewie, we're home? Do you think that's the Millennium Falcon?
It's
do you
Falcon.
Think it's
I
Corellia?
Think it's the Falcon.
Okay.
It's gotta be the Falcon.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind seeing Corellia. I have, like, no earthly idea what that planet looks like.
Yeah. I mean, that would be... It would be nice to see, but here's my thing. He says we're home, so obviously it has to be a place that Chewie and Han are both familiar with. And
oh,
the only
no.
place we know of is the Millennium
Falcon. And
they
looked like they were on the ship already.
That's true,
too.
Yeah. They were in the ship.
Unless they go back to Kashyyyk, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Was Han ever, like, on Kashyyyk? Because
during the Star Wars Holiday Special.
and of course, I'm the only guy here who's gonna keep bitching about the prequel trilogy, but from what I recall, there was originally a scene... on Kashyyyk in episode 3 of, like, 10-year-old Han.
What?
Who was, like, orphaned or something and being raised by Chewbacca's family.
They were going to do that?
They were.
Wow. I'm glad they didn't. Because
yeah,
I remember the novels in this, the Expanded Universe novels was, like...
Don't
like,
mean crap anymore.
I know, but, I mean, yeah. I still much enjoyed this. I still rather would have enjoyed the story that Han was a cadet in the Imperial Academy...
Yeah,
he refused to kill Chewbacca, and Chewbacca swore a life debt to him for saving him.
Yeah,
I also remember them saying that Kashyyyk wasn't even discovered by any of the other alien races until like the height of the Empire, like 6 or 8 years before the events of episode 4.
Well, because like if you didn't know about a planet full of like 10-foot tall, crazy strong,
because the Wookiees are generally extremely primitive by all the other civilization standards.
Yeah, it's, but yes, all right. So I guess we're to me now, and see that's the thing. Like I've been a fan of Star Wars since like the early '90s when I first saw Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first Star Wars film, not my favorite Star Wars film. It's like number two. It's a close second.
Yeah.
Number two.
But Empire to me has always been my favorite. So as soon as I saw like lightsabers, and I don't just mean the crossbar lightsabers, which I think is a cool concept. I know a lot of people were like, how does it work? How do they split the beam? It's not cool. I'm like,
memes.
I was like, it doesn't matter. It's still fucking cool. But
how do you split the... We can split laser beams. We can't tell lasers to stop at this arbitrary point.
True.
Stephen Colbert actually explained it.
Yes.
Has anyone seen that video?
No.
Yep.
I have not.
He literally does like a 3-minute dissection on how this could actually work.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I will...
Didn't watch that.
Yeah, right? But it's great. But here's my thing. I'm not talking about like the bad guys like tri-beam lightsaber. I'm talking about when like he's talking about Leia... And you see someone hand someone else a lightsaber, and I'm like, "Wait, is that? Is that Darth Vader's lightsaber?
That
hilt? It definitely looked like it.
That's
what I was thinking.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
I was so happy because I was like, "Oh man, is Leia training to be a Jedi? I was like, "Oh, but I know she didn't like before, but is it possible? I want
to
see.
I'd like to hope so.
Oh,
that would be pretty sweet if it's like finally like the Force is realized within the family.
No, I'm sorry, Leia. You're too old to begin the training.
Deuces.
Oh. We didn't get to you back when you were 3. Sorry.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just, but I mean, like, and also, I mean, you see Luke in the back. You just see the back of Luke, and I'm just like, oh, he's wearing the garb he wore in that deleted scene in Jedi. Oh, it's so cool. Did anybody see that scene, by
I
the
did,
way?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyone else see that scene?
Where Vader's just like, Luke, come
he's like, he's trying to communicate, like, Vader's trying to communicate with him telepathically, and Luke's building his green lightsaber, and then he starts it up, and then Vader just stops talking. I'm like,
yeah, ooh! That's so cool.
It's so good. Oh, I seriously can't wait. I can't wait.
It's going to be so
December,
good.
Right?
Christmas.
Okay, also, another trailer dropped. It was the trailer for the next Star Wars film to come out next Christmas. What is it? What are they calling it?
Rogue? Yeah, I think it's just... Rogue One.
Rogue One. And that film is supposed to take place between episode 3 and 4. It's about how the Rebels got the plans to the Death Star.
Whoa, cool.
Wait, I'm sorry, that dropped already?
Yeah, they dropped it at Celebration.
Holy cow.
Son of a bitch.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's a teaser.
So basically what you're telling me is that under Disney's reign, they're also going to make prequel movies? Fuck.
No.
Yeah, that was the thing that always confused me, because... like
it's going to be a Jedi-less Star Wars film, though.
Right, but that was the thing.
In spies.
Right, I was going to say, I thought the whole deal with Lucas and Disney was that no one could go back and do films between the original movies, and it all had to be post-Jedi.
No.
I mean, if that's not the case, that's fine. I don't care.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the specifics are.
Hey, it's a Star Wars heist movie, okay? I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, I'm down.
I mean...
The Italian job. We're already in
for the Marvel Cinematic Universe heist movie, so...
Ant-Man,
sure.
Yeah. Anyone see the trailer for the second Ant-Man film?
Yes. I'm finally getting excited about
Ant-Man
that movie.
Film.
The second trailer for the Ant-Man film. Sorry, that's my bad. But yeah, we watched it yesterday when we were recording.
I am so glad that Thomas the Tank Engine is canon in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Yeah. Yes. That was the best.
Yeah.
And like we were all wondering, like, who are they going to get for a villain? And, like, I remember it was Brian told you, Jordan, that it was going to be Yellowjack, and you were like, how's that possible? That's Hank Pym.
Yellowjack, it's still, like, if I can even think of the number of antagonistic presences that are unique to Ant-Man, wow. there's Egghead. He has a head that's shaped like an egg. And he predates Vincent Price by 2 whole years.
Oh!
So basically, it's the Marvel equivalent to Hector Hammond.
Without the powers.
Yeah. Oh, that's lame.
He's just got an egg.
He just has the egg-shaped head.
Yeah.
So he's Humpty Dumpty.
And Porcupine, the guy who has a who built a suit of quills. Expecting like every U.S. soldier to rush into battle in these things, like, oh no, the U.S. Army's here! Don't hug them!
Yeah,
suppress your natural desire to hug them. That's what they want.
Well, it was
they'll
the
get
60s.
You with their quills.
It
was the 60s. Free love was everywhere.
So
and
of course, Whirlwind, who before Whirlwind was known as the Human Top.
Right.
So, you know what? Maybe they should just go with Yellowjacket.
Yep. Probably. I'd say that's safe to say.
Of Hank Pym's Rogues Gallery, he's the one that, at least, I can imagine looking kind of threatening.
Yeah.
At least he's not Stilt Man.
God, is Ant-Man's Rogues Gallery even worse than Daredevil's? Wow. It might actually be.
Yes, I could.
Pot Pete, right? That was Daredevil.
Pot Pete was Human Torch.
Right. That would be a great villain for Ant-Man, Pastepot Pete. To see Ant-Man drowning in a river, like one stream of glue. He's just like, that'd be horrible.
Or flypaper.
That would also be bad. Yeah. That would be more problem for Janet, but...
Yeah.
Fortunately, Janet doesn't exist, so...
Yeah.
Not ready for that.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too, because I heard that Evangeline Lilly is going to play Pym's daughter in this... cinematic universe.
We've discussed this on previous episodes. I don't honestly think they could introduce Janet Van Dyne without bringing up the whole wife beating thing. I just don't think it's possible.
You know, the reason Hank Pym is not the star of the Ant-Man movie is because of the whole wife beating thing, and so instead Janet is just going to not exist so that Hank can be the Obi-Wan character.
Yeah, because, you know, that makes sense.
Honestly, you know, I'm sorry, Michael Douglas, I've made fun of you at least twice tonight, sorry, but Frankly, I would have preferred if Janet Van Dyne was the surviving member of that team.
Yes.
And she was the elder mentor character to Scott Lang.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think we all would have loved to have seen that. I mean, because, I mean, how often do you see a strong female mentor role? How often do you see that?
Not terribly often.
Not often.
I definitely not often enough to, like, probably cement a solid female presence in the
world. Oh, God. And they could cast Jessica Walter. That would be so perfect.
That would be the best.
Let's give her another chance to be in a Marvel movie other than the Doctor Strange movie from the 70s.
Oh, right. I had almost forgotten about that. Well, at least we get Benedict Cumberbatch in the new one. So
yeah, which I heard that's not going to be an origin story. I heard that that's actually just going to go straight into like a story without any kind of origin. Yeah.
I've heard that Marvel just doesn't want to do origin stories anymore.
I don't blame them necessarily, especially for Spider-Man. I was like, if I have to watch Uncle Ben die again,
right? I mean, at this point, yeah. When they do the Spider-Man movie, yeah. And again, we're coming up to.
Can you even think of a sadder reason for Uncle Ben to die than the take a penny, leave a penny tray?
I cannot.
No, yeah. I can't. It's
he dies over a bowl of free mints.
That's just
yikes. Dennis Carradine wanted all the mints, and he was going to let any old man stand in his way.
Peter could have stopped him.
Here's your Yoo-Hoo, kid.
Yeah.
All over a bottle of Yoo-Hoo, you selfish son of a bitch. Anyway. Oh, but yeah, so many good trailers. So many. Did anybody see Jurassic? All right, I'm going to talk about this last one. Jurassic World. Did anybody see it?
Loved it.
I didn't.
Boom.
Yeah.
There we go.
Visual reference in an audio podcast. Rocky's wearing a dress. Part 2.
I was all
the
about
Raptors
it.
Are on our side this time.
Yeah.
I will admit that. Like, that one, I was a little...
They were, like, the coolest characters in the movie.
I understand now how they did it. Now that I've seen this trailer.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just like... I was like, oh, man. How awesome would that be that Star-Lord is controlling 4 raptors?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, and here I thought there actually wouldn't even be raptors in the new Jurassic Park, now that we've conclusively proven that they had feathers.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think they're still sticking to that whole mythos that they're just not taking any of the least the more recent discoveries about dinosaurs. I was about to say dragons. I was like, dragons.
Where are my dragons?
Well, if you think about it, they're kind of...
Welcome to Draconic Park.
Yeah. Awesome.
No, I am the last one.
No, I was excited about it. I was like, man, it's a movie. There's dinosaurs in it. Of course I'm going to go see it.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're bringing the park back.
Exactly.
I mean, shit.
Just to destroy it again.
Yeah, and it's got the staple what's-her-face yelling, run!
I mean, and that's the cool thing, too, is like...
Dallas,
you know,
Bryce Howard. I can remember her name.
With Jurassic Park, it was like in prototype or, you know, like, you know, let's test this out mode. Let's bring a very number of people in here and see what people think. Here, the park's open. There are tourists there.
Yeah.
There's going to be casualties.
There's a mass amount of people.
It's
going to
be amazing. And I know how bad that sounds.
just the blip of the pterodactyls coming in and just like...
Oh, my God.
I was like,
yeah.
Yes.
After Jurassic Park 3, they still think it's a good idea to make pterodactyls.
Yeah.
It's
the,
not.
The aviary
just,
of the park.
Oh, man.
We
no.
can control them, though.
They're like giant mosquitoes that eat you.
It's the chaos theory all over again. Where's Jeff Goldblum when you need him?
Oh, I know. That would be
not
great.
This movie.
I know.
Oh, man. But no, like, for instance, I don't know if anybody else, what was it? Did you see Jurassic Park when it came back out in 3D?
Mm-mm.
I did
not.
We literally laughed for 20 minutes after Jeff Goldblum had like his close-up chest wide over the shot.
Oh, nice.
We were just dying. We're just like, why?
Why did this happen?
Oh, okay. All right, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Steve Custer about his campaign, hashtag Spidey Steve. All right, we're going to take a break.
Hi again, folks. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Did you know that this episode is brought to you by Castwave Studios and Think Geek? Go to castwavestudios.com/thinkgeek and click through to shop for everything from Enterprise pizza cutters to Sonic screwdrivers. They really work. This helps the studio. It doesn't cost you any extra. So bookmark and go to castwavestudios.com/thinkgeek and get your nerd on today. That's castwavestudios.com/thinkgeek.
All right, we're back. Now, we're going to talk about Spidey Steve. And this is Steve's grassroots campaign to become Peter Parker and Spider-Man, because again, they are two separate entities technically.
That they are.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, obviously, with Sony's deal with Marvel that came off, what was it, 2-3 months ago?
January.
Yeah.
January.
Yeah, it was late January.
Mm-hmm. So it's now created the opportunity. I think Spider-Man has been announced for 2017. Don't hold
July 28th, 2017.
Nailed it.
There you go. See? Someone's on top of the game.
Well, my birthday is like the day before, so.
Let's see. That's easy for you to remember. Yeah.
Midnight release.
There you
exactly.
go.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep. All right. So, well, Steve has started this campaign, and it's started as grassroots social media.
Yep.
But it's definitely hit some traction lately. And Steve, I'm actually going to let you discuss. And
yeah, sure.
I want you to tell us how this started.
Okay, sure, yeah. As corny as it sounds, actually it all started because I, just as a cosplayer and costumer, I got really excited about making a new Spider-Man costume, and I wanted to make a better red and blue. And I was kind of going the ultimate route and was just kind of polling people online saying, hey, you know, what design should I really try to pull off for printing and putting all my spandex, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
In mid-sewing up costume, I actually put it on and was like, hey, I've got an idea. And so I told my girlfriend about it, and she was like, that idea is so bad, it's good. And I was like, yep, let's do it. And so we created the website. It kind of went from there. And yeah, I mean, here we are today. And in a month's time, which the campaign at this point is 4.5 weeks old, and we went from nothing to being on Fox 5 locally. So there you go. Like, in a month's time, it's definitely built some groundswell.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's, I mean, again, Fox 5 is our DC local affiliate of the Fox Network, but still, going from just starting a social media campaign, and again, that usually takes, even if it's like, even if it hits huge on the internet, it usually takes a little bit more than a month. You're already getting put on, like, semi-national television status.
Yeah. I mean, it's still more than I can imagine, and I was very nervous. I mean, for anybody who probably watched it, they could probably be like, oh yeah, man, that guy was probably a little nervous and bouncy, but at the same time, I hope that I just came across more than anything as genuine and likable and showing a real interest, a real vested interest as a fan and as an actor, why I am suitable for this part.
Yeah, and I saw the interview because actually, surprisingly enough, before we actually started the whole process tonight, you and I were talking, and apparently the person who helped shoot the video for you actually used to be my boss.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like, apparently you and I know a lot of people, at least around the Frederick area, which, hey, small world, who knew?
Yeah.
But so I saw the interview, and I watched the test footage, and I was like, I could totally buy this guy as Peter Parker.
Oh, thank you. Well, shucks.
Physically, you got the look, you know. And I know they've been stating, like, they've been hammering on the point that Peter Parker must be in high school.
True. I play a lot of high schoolers. I get prototyped a lot as a high schooler in a lot of the musicals or plays that I'm in. So I feel like as far as being on the stage and kind of being that guy who's, you know, I'm all of 5'8" and 160 pounds. I get typed as young very quickly, especially if I'm clean shaven. So yeah, I feel like it's a no-brainer that I could totally pull off Hollywood high school.
Yeah, and it's entirely believable because, you know, you got the glasses, the whole, you know, sort of shaggy hair motif, you know. But Jordan and I were actually discussing this a few moments ago, and Jordan, I want you to, we were discussing the whole, you know, because Jordan had heard your voice as you were in the Spider-Man suit, and he hadn't seen your face yet, so, you know, obviously all he's got to go off of is the Spider-Man outfit and your voice. And he actually stated that he enjoyed your voice. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I really did like your voice. I placed it somewhere between Christopher Daniel Barnes, who was the voice actor from the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, and Josh Keaton, who is the voice actor from Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yes. Josh Keaton is definitely where I would draw my inspiration, most of where I've watched a lot of my recent Spider-Manning, but I obviously love the 90s series. It's what we all probably at this point grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Zing.
Yeah. But no, and so the
it's like, I heard your voice before I even knew what you looked like.
Oh,
as we're watching, as we're watching your test footage of... If we mentioned it yet, it's basically a reenactment of Spider-Man's unmasking during Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At which point, I guess I now have to mention just how much I utterly despise Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War tanked really hard in the end. It got me so excited in the beginning, and then eventually I just lost that interest when it was like, oh, Captain America's just turning himself in. I was like, oh,
Yeah.
I would have enjoyed it more.
Captain America's side, the good guys of the conflict...
lose.
Yes, yeah. And I would have loved it even more if it could have ended on that ambiguous note of Captain America actually dying in the Civil War storyline versus just having him die in his own comic book arc. Mm-hmm. Only just to then hammer that whose side are you on at the very end of it. Mm-hmm. I would have liked that, but oh well.
Yeah, of course, I've devoted two entire episodes of our comic book podcast to my review and dissection of Civil War, so I don't want
to drag that. No, that's okay. You should send those to me because I'll want to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, and that's the thing. When we first heard this, I mean, because again, I saw the campaign and I was like, I'm on board, 100%. Because the thing is that I've seen Tobey Maguire's interpretation, I've seen Andrew Garfield's interpretation, and both are not bad.
No, not at all. They have their strengths in both.
Exactly. But the problem is that each of them lack something. And it's just, it's hard to sort of pinpoint what it is.
I mean, I think it's pretty easy. I feel like Tobey Maguire was a fine Peter Parker and a lousy Spider-Man. Mm. And Garfield was a fine Spider-Man and a lousy Peter Parker.
There you go.
Okay, actually, he just summed it up for me.
There you go. And I can totally co-sign with that, because in my mind's eye, that perfect Spider-Man would have been that awkward Tobey Maguire, Peter Parker, but then right away could have also been that very quick, snappy, wise-cracking Andrew Garfield Spider-Man from The Amazing World.
Yeah.
When I saw Andrew Garfield do the knife bit in The Amazing Spider-Man, where he kind of did that, like, ooh, knives, my only weakness, that was the moment when I was like, okay, got it. Like, yes. I'm with you here. Because I love the Spider-Man that pops onto the scene and says things like, ah, I caught you with your plans down. Or, you know, something silly like that. Like, that's where I get on board with Spidey.
Okay. So,
whereas I can barely even remember a single line Tobey Maguire said in the suit.
Yeah.
All three movies.
I think I remember grunting. That might have been about
it. He's like, it's you who's out, Gabby. Out of your mind.
New sheriff in town.
Yeah, it's all pretty bad.
That's like it. That's literally it.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I know a line that he said in that suit. Mary Jane!
Oh God.
Yes. Repeatedly.
Okay, so, all right. So, here's my question. Okay, so, obviously, you've got this campaign going, and it's really making tracks, which is awesome. I mean, not only because you're local, and obviously, we like to see, you know, homeboy do good, right?
Let's hope so.
But also because, you know, is it just me, or is it, I want to see an unknown play Peter Parker.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, maybe it's just because, not only on top of the fact that, you know, they're not, you know, already Hollywood famous, sort of adds on to that sort of, you know, underdog-ish type character.
Yeah, I think that adds more to the element there. I guess when I was originally even thinking about this campaign, I thought, you know, this is totally a what would Peter Parker do to get this role kind of idea. You know, it's that everyman underdog.
That's true.
It's the actor who can earn his way into this role. And you know, with Spider-Man coming in so late into the game with the Avengers, I mean, he really is going to be that little guy who's trying to fit in. And so I feel like that could work so much to somebody's advantage as an unknown actor trying to play with all these A-listers anyway.
That's an extremely good... That's something, I mean, like, I was just thinking of it just on its most basic level, but now that you mention it...
Yeah, that's the meta level.
It works on every level.
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy. Okay, so, alright, a couple other things. Okay, so if you got the role of Spider-Man, like, so, as a for instance, we've seen Peter Parker Spider-Man his so many different ways portrayed. Like, as a for instance, would you prefer organic web shooters or mechanical web shooters?
I would prefer mechanical. I can totally understand.
High five.
I can understand why organic would work in the film world, just to kind of like rule out the idea of it. But the thing is the second you get rid of the web shooters, then you start to illustrate this idea that Peter Parker is not smart. That he can't build his own web shooters, that he can't make his own web, that he didn't go to school for bioengineering or anything to that degree. And if the second you start doing that, then you're starting to say that Peter's not smart. Yeah. And that's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah, I've more or less touched on that in a previous episode. And I also have to appreciate the narrative possibility that he might run out of ammo at a bad time.
Exactly. And that happens so many times. I was almost waiting, actually, in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I was thinking when the whole clock tower started falling apart and Andrew Garfield did the leap down before the web came out. And while the web effect was really cool and it looked like a hand was going out to reach Gwen, I actually just wanted him to, see him be out of web. I wanted to see him be like, oh my God, I can't do this.
I can't reach her.
Exactly.
That honestly would have probably been more poignant had that happened instead of hit the hand thing. But
it
Yeah. That's merely an aesthetic choice, and I understandably yeah. so. Okay, so, all right, so obviously...
Pretty embarrassing, still not as bad as Crane Dad.
Yeah, see Thomas Howell.
Yeah.
See Thomas Howell run.
Anyway. All right, so, okay, so mechanical whips, but let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
Mary Jane or Gwen?
I'm a Gwen guy, personally. I like seeing Gwen in the early stages of Peter's life because it has so many more after effects on his latter life.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you're going to have Gwen, I also want to see Mary Jane be a part of it, too, because Gwen's death doesn't just affect Peter. Like, that's the moment where... It's the moment of clarity for Mary Jane as well, yes, where she realizes indeed. She's not the life of the party anymore, and that mm-hmm. life isn't going to be this happy-go-lucky, I am a model all the time. You know, I feel like... It's a big wake-up call for both of them, and in its really strange, sad irony, draws the two of them together to be able to actually bond over this very sad moment Absolutely. As friends, which eventually leads to a budding romance.
And then Peter proposes to her, and she says no and vanishes for like 15 years.
Yep, there you go. Exactly.
That's totally normal
behavior. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so now we've seen some of the videos, uh-huh. and so obviously, you know, the one video was you recreating the scene from... Civil War when you're unmasking uh-huh. as Spider-Man becoming, you know, unmasking into Peter Parker. But we saw some of the trapeze work that oh, you yeah. were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that just something that you had done before, or are you just doing to start familiarizing yourself with the having to move around, becoming...
Sure, that's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. Okay. I used to do some trapeze when I was a lot younger. I used to do that with actually some really close family friends at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done it in years. And actually this year, for Valentine's Day, I just said to my girlfriend, hey, you know what? Let's go to the trapeze class down at down in D.C. We had a great time. She's admittedly much better than I am at it. But we've just started to religiously get back into it. And then it just kind of became one more thing to add onto this campaign mm-hmm. saying, hey, I can do my own stunts. I can do my own work. I am a very physical actor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And no, it's like, for those of you who haven't seen the videos, it's like very full on. He's like literally doing leaps and rolls and stuff. I'm just like, if you're trying to be an actor, isn't this a bad call? I mean, for the role you're trying to aim for, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Sure, just, yeah.
In any other sort of sense, it's like, that seems like an unnecessary risk.
But... it definitely could be. I mean, I know that there's a lot of actors who don't do their own stunts, and there are some actors who take a lot of pride in doing their own stunts.
Mm-hmm. Jeff
Chan. This is one where I definitely want to illustrate that I am capable to do this, mm-hmm. whether or not they wanted me to do it. And that's, again, the proverbial, I actually get this. Mm-hmm. But I would want to show that I'm physically capable of my own work, and even in a minimal way, I wouldn't need a body double all the time.
Yeah, no, and that's in most cases that definitely would play to your advantage, especially in a scene where, you know, there's a lot of action going on, which one would assume a Spider-Man film would call for.
Oh yes, yeah. Very much so.
Okay, so here's another question for you. Now, obviously, we've discussed, you know, smaller points of what you would like to see as Spider-Man. All right, let me ask you this uh-huh. now. In the Spider-Man film that the Marvel Cinematic Universe will put out, what do you believe that they're going to put Peter... That they're going to do another origin story, or they're just going to put Peter Parker...
I have heard that Marvel is done with origin stories.
Yes, I have heard the
Marvel
same.
I'm going to trust them
they confirmed.
Until okay. proven otherwise.
Yeah, and I guess tagging on to the thing that we said earlier, too, I don't know how much a popular audience could actually stomach watching another origin story of Spider-Man, because they are so...
Mm-hmm. We've had two mm. in the past, like, 15
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And this time, Uncle Ben dies over a bowl of free mints.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It could be something completely different.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think people are very familiar with that. And at this point, I mean, that's also just a popular trope for the creation of so many heroes, is a loved one dies, mm-hmm. someone in their family, and then that spurns a lot of their journey into becoming yeah. the hero.
Mm-hmm.
I think Spider-Man is one that illustrates it so much that people don't need to be reminded about it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let me ask you this then. So if they're not going to do an origin story, and you had the choice, like if, like, for instance, you got the role, and then they were like, okay, you're in the role, and we've been waiting to make a decision as to what we're going to do the story about. What Spider-Man story would you like to see on film?
Sure.
What would you like to act in?
My favorite Spider-Man run in general, comic book-wise, is the Todd McFarlane run. That whole entire era of Peter is probably my favorite. Now, while that's not high school Peter, it's my favorite because he's juggling so much all at the same time. Mm-hmm. He's having job issues. He's married to Mary Jane at that point in time, but he's still juggling a home life. He's juggling the status of being a reserve member of the Avengers while also still just maintaining his normal duties as Spider-Man. And I think that's what we need to see out of Peter, is that he's the guy that isn't an Avenger all the time. He's young enough that he's got to have his own life. He's got a wife or a girlfriend, or he's got his aunt. I think the best thing about Peter is just being able to watch how much he juggles on a very routine basis.
So, okay, now I remember in Spider-Man 2, we remember that we see sort of like the start of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like at that point, it's sort of like at about midway through the film, it sort of peters out to sort of focus more on Mary Jane and Peter's relationship.
Yeah.
But you're saying you'd like to see more of that just like throughout the film.
Yeah, I want to see that like throughout the film, just that struggle of this guy who, you know, he's almost by accident and providence become an Avenger. But at the same time, he's not the guy who's going to go back to the Avengers Tower at the end of the night. I mean, he's going to go home where he lives and or go back to school. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got so many other things going on in his life that I feel like that's what we need to see out mm-hmm. of this hero, this Spider-Man, that will make him so different against the other Avengers, where it will totally be cool for him to get, you know, some witty banter with Tony Stark and maybe get trained by Steve Rogers at the same time. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, dude's still got to go home and pick up milk on the way to give to Aunt May, and he's probably going to have to wake up for school tomorrow. So I feel okay. like mm-hmm. the best way to make Peter relatable, and especially in a very popular, fast-paced American society that we are in, mm-hmm. is watching this struggling youngster take on so much with the power that he's been given and still, you know, still make it.
And as Jordan mm-hmm. has mentioned on BJ and Comic Shop many a time, I think it's Peter's biggest draw as a character is that he is identifiable
oh, yes.
with the mm-hmm. with the most of the populace that would be reading these comics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like that's hardly a secret, but for someone like me who is through the Marvel Essential line, I've read possibly every single Marvel comic from the 60s. Wow. All of them.
Congratulations.
That's compared to the other guys at the time, like how the Fantastic Four were, they had their skyscraper headquarters, and they have any number of weird-ass science fiction vehicles in their garage to go to space whenever they need to. Or you know, Tony Stark has his own company
yeah.
and has unlimited resources. And Thor is a god and a surgeon and an inventor of androids.
Yeah.
And the X-Men have their mansion and they have their jet and they have several helicopters if the jet doesn't work. You know, like all these guys have so many resources at their disposal that is just grist for the mill of the kind of stories that the kind of far out fantastical stories that they get involved in, and that's great. But then you have Peter Parker, who is actually worrying about making rent,
yeah,
oh, or
yeah.
worrying about, you know, graduating
or keeping his job, like all kinds of stuff.
Maybe today he has really bad dandruff. You know, this is a character who actually has
honestly real people
problems
yeah.
that none of the other characters had, and that really stands out like a beacon to me.
I'm going to tag on to that too, because that's something I kind of want to say as an unknown actor trying to break mm-hmm. into this as well, is that the difference between me and an A-list actor who would be interested in this role is an A-list actor gets to go to their agent and say, hey, you know what, I'm interested in playing Spider-Man. I don't have the luxury of being able to do that or get that kind of representation right now. And while that is something I'm actually working on as of today with the Washington Talent Agency, mm-hmm. I have to tell the world that I'm interested in playing Spider-Man. And mm-hmm. that's part of the grassroots effort, is that mm-hmm. I'm not the A-lister. I'm not the Avenger.
It's convincing the world.
And it's you're not Peter Parker. And it's not. And I also think that adds, you know, to the human element. Because, you know, obviously, you know, A-list actors, they put their hat, you know, they put their name in the hat. And, you know, obviously, it comes down to the casting agency mm-hmm. and everything. But you've also got, you know, hopefully this campaign, you got popular opinion. You obviously got the look. You've got the voice. You got the gravitas. I mean, obviously, I mean, you're doing trapeze, for God's sake. One would assume that's definitely going to amp into your favor. But then you hear that sort of thing. Like, you're a young up and coming actor, and you know you're trying to break into Hollywood, and you know you got the hunger, and it's all there, but the story is like it's like Someone's going to be making a movie about this someday.
I can only hope.
They are. Stranger things have happened.
That's true.
Yes. But no. And so I guess my last question is, and I'm going to open it up to you guys after this, is that obviously the outcome of this is that you would like to see yourself named as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't happen, but say you get named into a role, like maybe not Spider-Man, but maybe something in the Spider-Man, you know, universe, or something like that. Have you ever thought about that? Like, what?
Oh yeah, I mean, I've also just kind of had it in the back of my head that since I started the campaign, there is a strong likelihood that somebody could already be picked for Spider-Man, could already be contracted, and just on confidentiality, they're not allowed to go public with it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And while I definitely want to put myself out there right now, I do want Marvel and its, you know, and its associates and casting agents to see that somebody who is a fan, who is an actor, wants to be a part of this so much that I would gladly take a bit part in the MCU. Maybe if that was like, I don't know, Eddie Brock, or you know, maybe even some other kind of villain-esque character that could be in Spider-Man, or at least in his age range as well.
Yeah.
Those are things that I would definitely be interested in. But at the same time, you know, if I got to play Spider-Man, or you know, I was able to really have that opportunity, or even be a stunt double to Spider-Man, I mean, those are the kind of like pipe dream goals that I really want to emphasize on. Yeah, if I got to play Spider-Man, that would make my career as an actor, because that would be a significant acting achievement to be a part of something that I'm so passionate about as an actor and as a comic book fan.
Yeah.
So that's definitely where the campaign is going. And if I'm not Spider-Man, that's okay. I'm just in my prime right now to be able to play a role like that, and I have to try. Because honestly, if I didn't, I would be kicking myself so hard for not putting myself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you just basically described the Cast Wave Studios mantra. Hey, all right. All right, so I want to go ahead and end this little session here. Brian and I, and I was talking with Jordan about it while you guys were outside, I came up with a little idea, and I just, because obviously, you know Spider-Man, and I would assume you would call yourself a Spider-Man fan. I mean,
I am.
Visual reference in an audio podcast, he's wearing a Spider-Man pin on his lapel, you know?
Hey, I have to.
So the question, I have an idea. It's called The Good, The Bad, and The Meh.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw out something from Spider-Man, and I want your reaction to it.
Okay. And with those answers, the good, the bad,
good,
the meh?
Good, bad, or meh.
Okay.
All right, so let's see. Ultimate Spider-Man.
Good.
Okay. How about Civil War?
Meh?
Okay.
Gmeh.
Okay. Gmeh, I'll accept that. That's an answer.
Started off good, ended meh.
Spider-Man 3.
Bad.
CGI Spider-Man on MTV.
Meh. I like Neil Patrick Harris.
Okay.
And he voiced it, and he did a spectacular job.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Ultimate Spider-Man. All right. Clone Saga.
Bad.
Ben Reilly.
Good. Depending on the story.
Okay. All right. Okay. One More Day.
Bad. Absolutely terrible. Worst possible thing that happened to Spider-Man. I would love to have express words with Joe Quesada.
I got one. Since Past.
Loved it.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Which was surprising.
Okay. So,
because there are some stories that I did find myself very surprisingly attracted to. It was mostly just because I thought the idea was good, not necessarily the execution. Because that one, I have
enormous problems with the idea. Really, but in case you don't know, Since Past was the original worst goddamn thing to possibly happen to Spider-Man a year before One More Day.
Yes.
I mean, I guess we can thank One More Day for kind of erasing this, sort of.
Yes, sort of. Yeah.
Okay. Since Past was the story that revealed that Gwen Stacy had born two of Norman Osborn's children.
Yep.
And that they grew up really fast from their goblin DNA, and their twin children, a boy and a girl, and they look exactly like Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy.
Which one would assume, how is that possible? Because Norman Osborn...
The original script, they were Peter's kids.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that script changed around so much that when I originally heard about it and was seeing kind of all of the press build up for it, I was really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And again, in the execution, I can admittedly say it was very sloppy, but I liked the idea of it. And
It was also the first time in a long time I felt like Gwen's name and things happening around Gwen Stacy were coming back. But that also was kind of around the same period in time that, like, I think in the Batman world, Hush had just happened, and that was the first time they'd brought up Jason Todd in a long time, too. Mm. I remember that being a thing right around then, where it was like characters that we thought were dead for good all of a sudden just got a blip. And
was Hush Jason Todd? I mean, I thought Hush was
Clayface, but
Clayface was masquerading as Jason Todd.
Yeah, okay,
he masqueraded as Jason Todd, and it left that really ambiguous note of, was that really could it have been him?
Okay.
And then, well, not a year or two later,
right? And then Superboy Prime punched the Universal Bell, and then Jason Todd came back.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Oh, one other thing. Good, better, meh. Dr. Octopus marrying Aunt May to get his hands on her Canadian power plant.
Oh, meh.
Okay. I guess I promised our friend Kat the next time that she shows up for we can bring her by for a comic shop. I have to review that. I just have to.
Yeah. It's just too good of a premise. I mean, like, seriously, like, why does Aunt May have a Canadian power plant?
If I have the time to make a double feature, I'm going to review that and its sequel.
There's a sequel.
Yes.
What?
It involves vibration ghosts.
So reasons.
So vibration ghosts, good, bad, or meh?
That actually, I can say I can't give an answer to because I'm not familiar with it.
Right, well, if you've seen Ghostbusters,
yeah.
Anyway,
well, actually, here I'll put a question out to you guys. Okay. This is one that I would be terribly curious about: Superior Spider-Man and the whole story that started that. Good, bad, or meh?
If you're asking me how I felt about the swap, I would say bad.
Okay.
If you ask me about the... Because that was the thing. Originally, I would have said bad. Bad, 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 bad. Like, worst... I would have said that's the worst possible thing that's ever happened to Spider-Man. But then again, then I read one more day. I was like, oh, you sold your marriage to the devil. That's... No.
Okay.
That's even worse.
That's worse.
I liked Spider-Man 700. Uh-huh. I actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to think about the ramifications of the mind swap, and especially his relationship with Mary Jane, mm-hmm. and that was skeeving me right the fuck out.
Yes, right.
So imagine my surprise then when I eventually do read. We read the first four. Mm-hmm. It's actually part of a review on the show, and not only does Doc Ock as Peter Parker break up with her to pursue Anna Marie,
yes.
which I thought was really goddamn sweet.
Yeah.
But so many other little things that he does, like when he learns that Peter Parker only has a bachelor's degree, and he's so horrified by that, he puts everything else on hold to get another doctorate.
Yes.
I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah.
There were some
really cool moments. The initial idea that I was, mm-hmm. you know, I was terrified about.
Yep.
And then... Yeah, when I read 700, that whole bit where Peter was kind of in that, I don't know what to call it, but that otherworldly state of seeing his life in an afterlife sort of manner, mm. I loved that whole sequence. That was extremely touching.
Yep.
But then moving into the Superior Spider-Man comic, I was super nervous, couldn't really get on board, but it had its moments.
Yes.
I did not keep up with reading it. I think I got about 8 issues in, and that was around the point that I stopped. And it was mostly because of the whole old Ben Kenobi, Peter Parker kind of syndrome was happening.
Yeah.
And I would have really just liked to have seen them move forward with just no Peter, period,
well,
if that was the idea.
They did.
Yeah, and I heard they did, but I had stopped reading.
So.
Well, so to answer your question...
I mean... Well,
yeah, go ahead. No,
yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same. It's like, initially it was... No,
right,
why are you doing this?
Initially, yeah, I would have gone with bad.
Yeah, but then I read it and I was like, this is amazing. Well, it's not amazing, but you know,
it's superior.
It's superior. Well,
lol.
It's, but
I'm gonna say meh, leaning towards good.
Okay, good meh.
Good meh.
Just because I wasn't sold at the initial premise, I was skeptical reading through the 30 issues, and then when they brought him back, I was like.
Yeah.
I kind of feel bad for Otto, but then I found out it's like, oh, Spider-Verse, he still lives. Okay.
Yeah, he's still here.
Okay, cool. But, so, I would go with Gamet. Like, would I read it again? Sure, I'd read it again.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the best thing to come out of Superior Spider-Man, Anna Maria.
Yeah.
Because she's still a character in the Amazing Spider-Man 2014.
And the new series of Amazing. Yeah.
And their dynamic is awesome because she is such a straightforward character. Mm-hmm. She's like, look, you're not Otto. You're not the man I fell in love with, but we're also business partners. I know you're Spider-Man, and we gotta be straightforward with each other about this shit. It's none of this, like,
otherwise this isn't gonna
he
work.
Said, she said kind of thing, you know, where, you know, I don't know if who's...
No, no innuendo.
Yeah, it's straightforward. Like, look, I'm looking out for your best interests. It's just, it's great. It's a great switch up for me.
Yeah.
And it just really works, especially since Spider-Verse is over. Like, they've been in the more recent issues. They've really, like, touched on that again, and it's wonderful. Like, anybody who's wanted to start reading Spider-Man, like, you know, the newer stuff, I totally recommend it, because it's...
And it is something that I feel like fans can actually get on board right now and feel like they're at the beginning era of another Spider-Man.
Yes.
And that feels good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so, Steve, for the fans out there listening, can you tell us where they can find or get more information or support Spidey Steve?
Sure. I'd say everything is on my website, which is just SpideySteve.com. Everything that's there will connect you to any of my social medias where I post a lot of my news. You can see my gallery, my resume. I also have a couple different buttons that are featured right promptly on the homepage that if you click Get Me the Role, then you will be tweeting at Marvel to say that you'd like to see Steve Custer, Spidey Steve, as Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
All right. So for those of you listening out there, remember to click that button as many times as is humanly possible.
Amen.
Yes. All right. So once again, we want to thank Steve Custer for coming on the show and giving us the opportunity to promote his campaign.
Thank you, guys.
It's a great idea. I want to see Spidey Steve. I believe in Spidey Steve.
Amen. I believe in it too.
I'm serious. I'm going to make a t-shirt. It's going to have your picture on one half. It's going to have Spider-Man's face on the other half. And it's going to be, I believe in Spidey Steve.
I'll stand next to you with an I believe in Harvey Dent shirt and it'll be awkward.
There you go.
I prefer I believe in Spidey Steve. It rhymes.
Hey, yeah.
I believe in Spidey Steve.
Da, 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 da. Oh, no, it's like I've got a song now.
Yeah, there you go.
I believe in Spidey Steve.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so I want to say thank you, and thank you for joining us on Boldly Going Nowhere's post 100th episode special.
Ooh, thank you guys very much. Thwip.
All right, and I want to thank you all for listening for 100 episodes, and hopefully we'll have another 100 episodes more.
Yep. Woohoo! It'll only take another 5 years.
So. On behalf of Boldly Going Nowhere, I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And I'm Steve Custer.
And you're Boldly Going Nowhere.
And this is the Spider-Man.
Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.